LibroFM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. Choose from more than 150,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With LibroFM, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know what one we're talking about, but you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community.
If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. Listen while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free LibroFM app.
If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out recommendations and curated lists from the people who know audiobooks best, local booksellers.
Listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get a 2-month audiobook membership for the price of 1 month.
Go to Libro.fm, that's Libro.fm, and enter bookstore at checkout. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I am Corinne. Welcome back to the bookstore. I don't know if we really have any news that you haven't heard already, so
let's get into it. So we read How Much of These Hills is Gold by C. Pam Zhang, which was published in April of this year by Riverhead Books, and I am just going to read the cover flap because I'm not really exactly sure how to summarize what happens in this book. Okay. What makes a home a home? Ba dies in the night. Ma is already gone. Newly orphaned, Lucy and Sam, ages 12 and 11, are suddenly alone and on the run. With their father's body on their backs, they roam an unforgiving landscape dotted with giant buffalo bones and tiger paw prints, searching for a place to give him a proper burial. Along the way, they must battle their own secrets, the illusion of the American dream, and each other. Set against the twilight of the gold rush in a reimagined American West, How Much of These Hills is Gold is a sweeping adventure story, an unforgettable sibling story, and the announcement of a stunning new voice in literature. With fiercely original language and a story that is both epic and intimate, C. Pam Zhang has written a remarkable novel about a family bound and divided by its memories. So we're going to spoil probably a lot of this book, if not all of it. We'll try to warn you with any big ones, but that's your first warning.
Yes. As usual, I think we've gotten away from not spoiling more than not. It is like a book club discussion. That's the premise here. So, yeah, it's funny having you read like a cover flap. I know we've done it a couple of times, but that one gets like very grand and like markety.
Yeah,
so it's funny. So I think obviously the description there definitely tries to sell you on the voice of the novel and Zhang's what is very kind of poetic style of writing. How did you find the writing in general to work for you? Okay, maybe should I start it this way? Hey, so I think this is probably like our first Western that we've ever read, and that's partially why I wanted to read it. I haven't read a Western in a long time. For a while, I was reading a lot of like Cormac McCarthy, which I think you could consider to be Westerns. One thing I really liked about this was the setting. I really liked the setting, like the actual literal environment that they are in, and also like the time period, I thought was really interesting. And I liked it for not necessarily being contemporary, because it was a nice distraction from all of the things going on in the real world right now.
Yeah, I think that is where Zhang's writing works the best for me. Is she has a very lyrical, poetic style. And I think when she is describing where they are, it just kind of like I can see the environment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When the two siblings are roaming around, as the cover flap said, trying to find a burial place for their dad, I can really feel like the loneliness and the emptiness and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when they're in the shack with their parents, when the parents are still alive, or their house, that also I think is really good. You can kind of see the place where they live, what they eat, that kind of thing is when...
Yeah, it's a little more atmospheric.
Yes, yes. The atmosphere works really well. I do think, I'm going to tell you right up front, that I think the style takes away from the story. I think that it's focused too much on how it's written, and there's not enough actual information and details about what is going on for it to really work perfectly for me.
Yeah, I found this to be like a little bit fusty in its, I don't know, lyricism, I guess. And I think that's kind of maybe funny because people might remember that the last book we read, the Their Eyes Were Watching God, I talked about how beautiful and like romantic and poetic that writing was. But there's something in this that's like, it's a little bit stilted for me, I guess. I don't know if stilted's the right way to put it. I've got a selection here that kind of, I think, maybe highlights what I wasn't like super into. First of all, most of the book is written in present tense, which, as everybody who is a longtime listener of the podcast knows, not our favorite. But this section is a flashback, so it is written. Did I say, what did I say? Did I first say first person or present tense?
You said present tense, either way. Think.
Yeah, so this part's in past tense. Here it goes. Lucy's first dead thing was a snake. Five and full of destruction, she stomped puddles just to see the world flood. She leapt, landed. When the waves quit their crashing, she stood in a ditch emptied of water. Coiled at its bottom, a drowned black snake. The ground steamed pungent wet. The buds on the trees were splitting, showing their paler insides. Lucy ran home with scales between her palms, aware that the world unfurled its hidden side. So I see what's happening here, but I think there is something about it that just really caught me up. You know, I think that's mainly just preference, but also it sort of feels like it's just intentionally leaving out like articles and different things that are, that will just like make its meaning plain to you. Mm-hmm. I think there's something about with scales between her palms that really stuck out to me, which is like, can't you just say with the dead snake in her hands? You know, like it, there is a little bit like that's just a little too reaching for me to like really have been able to get in. And I want to say this is on page 30. And so it took me a while to like really be able to dig in and like get myself settled in a way that I felt like I knew what was happening in the story. And even once I did, other things would just like upend me too. So while I didn't totally dislike this, the writing for me kept me from being able to really connect to it immediately, I think. It was a little off-putting.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it's funny you brought up Their Eyes Were Watching God, because in that, where the real poetry and the beautiful writing comes in a lot is when she's talking about feelings and emotions, like sitting under the pear tree and what that feels like. And those, you know, our emotions are really complicated. And, you know, we often feel things in sort of like images as opposed to like, I feel happy or sad or whatnot.
Right.
Whereas this book describes everything in that manner. And it's hard to kind of understand what's going on, like what is actually happening. I also have an example, and this is on page 123, and Lucy just found a nugget of gold. Okay. The nugget is heavy and sun warm, the size of a small egg. She turns it. There's a hollow through its center. It slips over her middle finger. Take a corner, Ba says, squeezing his finger and thumb together to show how much. Lucy looks at him, disbelieving. Try it, Lucy girl. It has no taste, no juice. Her mouth floods anyway. She was parched and quenched and now only quenched. Does it change her, that fleck she swallowed? Does it glimmer just under her skin, subtle between stomach and heart? Years later, she will probe herself in the dark, wondering if she could see the difference. I was incredibly confused. Like, that just confused me because I don't, what is her mouth flooding with?
Yeah,
it's just such a strange way of describing like the action of her chomping off a bit of the gold. And I understand gold is soft, but it just like it was sort of like a really long way of saying something, and it is confusing.
People in this book eat a lot of things that are not supposed to be eaten, which I find very strange. But you reading that reminds me that, like, she describes a lot of things as, like, either having juice or not having juice. And it's in this way that's like, is this a common, like, is this a common saying? I thought it was really strange, and it didn't like really describe at any point what Lucy thinks of as having juice. You know, like there was no value that I understood like what juice means to her. Because I think, like, you know, people can have different ways of describing things that make sense to me, like, you know, synesthesia and stuff like that. Like, people can, like, hear colors and different things like that, you know? But, like, mm-hmm. you kind of have to set up a metric for which I understand what that means in order for me to, like, be able to connect with it in any sort of reasonable way. But, yeah, I think there was a lot of stuff that I think is interesting, but I just wasn't able to fully connect with.
Yeah. So to kind of talk about how it's set up. So the first section is right after their dad, Ba, dies, and they steal a local teacher's horse and leave town after Sam attempts to shoot a banker who refuses to lend them the silver to bury Ba. This kind of has a weird setup that reminded me in some ways of Trust Exercise, only in that it reveals more information as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know to what end exactly.
Right.
So there's a lot of the first section that I like. I do like them roaming around, but it was hard for me to understand why they were roaming around.
Ah, God, this is so complicated because once it got really established, I was there for it. And I really enjoyed reading about these two kids like out in the hills making their own way, like mm-hmm. as the adventure. I find that very compelling. But there would be things that would really confuse me, like the fact that Lucy leaves Sam to go through the house and pack up whatever Sam needs, and then they head out. And so she doesn't realize until like a few days later that Sam has put their father in their mother's trunk, and they are just transporting a corpse around, and it's just covered in flies and maggots, and he's like putrefying. And I mean, there's like a lot of logistical things that I just don't understand about that. Like, was the horse pulling the trunk behind it, like just with a rope? How did Sam, an 11-year-old, get their father's dead body into a trunk? Like, there's a lot of things in this book where I would get really caught up on those sorts of details. Like, I understand them poetically and like as plot. I find it interesting that like kids would do that, you know, like take the body with them. I do think that's interesting, but the logistics of it just literally do not make sense to me.
Right. No, same. I have no idea how an 11-year-old could do that. And it also sort of confused me. Like, so they need silver dollars to put over the eyes of their yeah. dad to bury yeah. them. But we don't really know why. And this is kind of like also, well, I feel bad that I keep bringing up bad stuff, like things I didn't like about it. But I understand that it's like the burial rite, but it's so important. And they're like starving, but they're still like Lucy gets so mad at Sam for taking the silver dollars. And there's not enough, like I don't know Lucy enough to understand why would she be so connected to this burial rite. That
right.
we don't really know the burial rite. We just know that Lucy wants to, like, go along with it.
I mean, we do know the burial rite in that the dead snake that I was talking about earlier, like, her mother teaches her that you need to weigh down the dead with silver at burial. But, yeah, there's not really anything that, like, explains why it's so important. Just yeah. that, like, that's a thing that you do. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, and I also just thought it was strange because, like, they needed the silver for it, but it turns out that Sam had it all along. And then when they finally do bury him, Sam doesn't leave the silver. Sam takes it. So, like, a lot of, like, little details that were, like, built up as, like, very, very important just end up not being used, I think, because it was, like, convenient to not use them to further a plot in a weird way. And I just, like, that's stuff that, like, I didn't find completely satisfying. So,
yeah. And same kind of with their whole drive, and especially Sam's drive to keep going until they find the perfect place to bury Ba.
Yeah.
I like that idea. Again, I'm with you. I think it's really interesting. I didn't really feel like it was very adventurous exactly, because it was very sad, like what they were doing,
yeah,
roaming around in these hills by themselves. But the reasoning for it just kind of falls short for me, because we just keep being told, well, Ba liked to move and liked adventures and liked to go a lot of different places. But we don't really ever see that.
Yeah. And I think that's a function of the weird structure of this book. So this section that we're speaking about now is then followed by a section in which Sam and Lucy are 7 and 8 years old and their mother and father are still alive. And then after that is a section where finally Ba comes in and like narrates his whole story, which seems like it would have been like really useful much earlier in the book. Yeah. And then later it's like them at like 16 and 17 years old, and then like what they're going to do for their future. So yeah, it's really, I didn't find the jumping around in time in the way that the story was broken up to be terribly helpful. I don't normally mind time jumps necessarily, but I didn't see how this really served the narrative all that well, unfortunately.
Yeah, I feel the same. Oh, so there's a part when Ba and Ma are still alive where Lucy goes to get personally tutored by the teacher in town.
Uh-huh.
And I really liked all of that. I thought Ma taking it upon herself to go with Lucy and convince the teacher to teach Lucy was all like very compelling. However, an overall sort of issue I had with Lucy is she keeps trusting these people, but she also at the same time seems to hate them and know that they're not good people. But then the choices she makes are trusting them. And I don't really understand why. So here's a minor spoiler. But when they're about to leave, Lucy is going to go take a nugget of gold and show the teacher. The teacher, who she doesn't even really seem to like, and she recognizes, I think the book doesn't obviously spell this out, but that he's racist because he kind of parades her in front of the other people. And I just don't understand why she would do that. Like, I don't get the justification.
Yeah. Have we spoken about how they are Chinese? Was that in the description?
I don't think it was, but yeah, that's something okay. We probably
yeah.
missed.
So, yeah. Yeah. It should probably be mentioned that the family is Chinese and it's in the West. I would say, I mean, not necessarily before a lot of Chinese people came to the U.S. to like work on the railroads and stuff like that. But they do seem like enough of a, I don't want to call it novelty, but like enough white people seem to be surprised by them that it seems like, you know, there maybe aren't a ton of Chinese people in the West at this point. So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting, too, where the teacher kind of like saw her as this weird study subject to kind of like go back east and share about this remarkable young Chinese girl who is like exemplary for her race or whatever. I thought that was an interesting little side point. And also that like bears fruit like historically, you know, just because like, of course, there was like all of that weird social Darwinism stuff and everything else. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting to be able to establish like the racism that Chinese people maybe would have experienced in that time in that location specifically. But yeah, I did think that maybe there wasn't quite enough development of Lucy like as a character herself. And I think maybe this is a problem with a lot of the characters in the novel, where they kind of just act in a way that's like useful for the circumstances of the scene that they're in, instead of having like full arcs or fully realized kind of characterizations.
Yeah, and I agree. I also, like, I definitely learned in school about how there was a lot of Chinese people who came to the U.S. during the gold rush. And then I think probably later with all like building the railroads, but they don't show up a whole lot in literature or in movies or anything, unless it's like in an opium den in San Francisco or whatever.
Right.
So when the book did kind of show sort of like a day in the life, like Lucy going through town and, you know, what both her and Sam had to go through at school, what Ba had to go through at work, things like that, I think were really good because I just don't know how it was back then because we just don't have a lot of books about it. And so I really appreciated and liked those parts that kind of showed what kind of racism they faced, especially since it was really just a confusion on people's parts for where they were from and who they were, because it's obviously not like today. People weren't aware, like they didn't necessarily know where China was, who Chinese people were. So I don't know, that just added like kind of a different type of racism, I guess. So that was all like really interesting.
I think it really also kind of highlighted this idea that white Americans really believed that the land belonged to them, mm-hmm. which is obviously not true because, of course, like, especially out west, they were residing alongside of Native Americans, too, who were obviously there first. And so it's really strange that they would be so exclusionary of Chinese Americans who were literally doing the same thing that European Americans did in coming to the U.S. For, you know, job opportunities and that sort of thing. It's just, yeah, I mean, it really shows the hypocrisy there. It's really interesting, I think. I like this book a lot for that inclusion and just like the representation there. Because, yeah, like you said, it's not something that you see a lot in Westerns when clearly Chinese Americans were a huge part of building the West. And that's just kind of insane that it gets excluded from so much of our history and the media that represents that time period.
Yeah. I think, too, having Ba actually be born in California, I assume it's California, was just a brilliant thing to show that, yes, Chinese Americans were here and born here that long ago.
Yeah. One of the, like, it was just a tiny kind of subplot that you don't get a lot of. And I think maybe that's also what I found frustrating about this is that it seems like this book focused on maybe in some ways the most boring character, who is Lucy, instead of like the people I was more interested in, like Sam and also Ba, because we don't really understand like his parents. How did he come to the U.S., I guess? You know, like, I think it is, you know, interesting that he seemed to have predated like a lot of Chinese Americans in that he was here like way before the gold rush, even. Well, he was born here before the gold rush. So, yeah, I found that interesting. And I kind of would have liked to hear a little bit more about that story, too. And I don't remember where I was going. Oh, yes, I know. Back on track. But with Ma, she's the only one in the family who knows and speaks Chinese. And she doesn't really realize that Ba doesn't, I think, to some degree. When they first meet, he is working for this railroadman and taking this group of 200 Chinese immigrants to work on the railroad. And she is one of them. And he is discouraging them from speaking Chinese because he only knows how to speak English. And I think like maybe as a way to force assimilation in to some degree. But yeah, I found that really interesting that, you know, she uses some Chinese phrases in dealing with the children, but it doesn't seem that she's explicitly taught them Chinese. And then there's one point when these men come to take their gold, and Ma jumps up and kind of like tries to give directions to Ba, and she does it all in Chinese and nobody understands her. And there's this kind of moment afterwards where she realizes that her children didn't understand her at all. And I thought that was just a really kind of, I mean, obviously very heartbreaking, very traumatic, because people came and took their money, essentially, all they had. But also sort of a beautiful representation of like this loss of her culture and her language within her family.
Yeah.
I don't mean beautiful as in like, look at how beautiful and wonderful it is, but beautiful in that I really liked the way it was represented that way.
Yeah. And I did also think it was interesting how reluctant Ma was to tell Lucy where she was from, which I kind of saw that as Ma trying to also assimilate her children and make sure that like they're Americans. And she doesn't say this, obviously. I mean, I don't even know if there was the identity of American at this time, but from California or whatever, as opposed to being from China. And so she refused to ever tell Lucy where she was actually from. And I thought that was interesting with the fact that, you know, she didn't know that Ba didn't speak Chinese. I did like that sort of middle section when we learn about the backstory of Ma and Ba and how they met. Mm-hmm. I did think all that was really good. It did not make me like either one of them anymore. But I think it answered a lot of questions. Yeah, I don't really think it did anything to the story or to the narrative to have us find out that stuff after, you know, they were already dead. But it did. It was interesting and it was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, I liked the history of that. I think it did more of the historical work, I think, like explaining the context of the reason, I guess, not the reason why they're there, but, you know, like the history of Chinese people coming to this country and like the work that they would have been doing and that sort of thing. I think that's interesting representation, obviously. But also, like, the story kind of goes like really off the rails when you find out this big kind of secret that they kept. I don't know exactly like what purpose that served, except to like give them this huge kind of dark backstory that I don't know that was like 100% necessary, you know?
Yeah. I feel that way about a lot of things. I think in general, there's pieces of this book that are really good, but it didn't gel together for me. Same with what you said about how Lucy is the most boring one, whereas everybody else is a bit more interesting. I can't help but feeling that the most interesting stories that happen to this family are happening off screen where I can't read it. There's huge chunks of time where we're told that all of this, you know, bizarre stuff, adventures happened, but we don't get to see any of them. Thinking specifically of, so eventually Sam and Lucy split up and they eventually come back together when they're several years older. And Sam has all of these stories that they tell about, like, oh, this guy got bit by a rattlesnake and then this happened and I almost drowned. But we just get like a list of them. We don't actually get the story.
Yeah. And I also have we also spoken about Sam in general?
I don't think so. No.
Okay, so let's bring that up now, I guess. Sam is Lucy's sibling. Sam was assigned female at birth. And it seems, it's hard to like talk about this sort of thing, like historically, I suppose. But Sam, I guess you could maybe say is transgender, potentially. They didn't have the terms for that, so it's never ever explicitly said that way, but Sam dresses as a man would for that time period and is perceived by most people to be male. And so I did find that really interesting because the book treats Sam that way, never uses specific pronouns for them, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree. I definitely, like, in the beginning of the book, just sort of naturally thought Sam was a boy, even though there was no pronouns used, just by how Sam was written about, which I think is just like would be a fascinating study of how we read things like that. Like, what are the signifiers in what we're reading that we think this character is a man or a woman, boy, girl, male, female, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't until Lucy like straight up called Sam her sister that I realized what was going on. And I just thought that was like, oh, that's very, very interesting way to write somebody.
Yeah. So, right. So Sam heads off on their own after Lucy ends up in this town called Sweetwater. What I thought was interesting because at the end, when they end up together again, and I think they head out, and I'm assuming this is San Francisco that they go to because it probably would have been the biggest like city out that way at the time. Sam takes Lucy basically to this brothel, and they have some conversations regarding like the madam there. And so I was wondering, did Sam necessarily do all of those things that they claimed? Were those just stories that they were telling? Or do you think they actually did them? Because it also sounded like maybe they had worked as a sex worker at that brothel for a period of time.
That's a good question. And I didn't think about that because Sam's entire story does feel pretty convoluted to me. We find out at some point that Sam actually like owes a lot of money. But then we don't find out why until much later. And the reason why is like said in these like two quick sentences. And then that's all
right.
that we get of the story. And it also makes me think of Ba's story because Lucy refers a lot to Ba's storytelling and all the things that he says. And there's a tiger. And is that true or not? And throughout the book, she compares Sam to both Ma and Ba and like thinks about how close Sam is to Ba. And so that might be it too, just like showing how similar Sam and Ba are,
right.
especially in that like telling stories.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought that was interesting because just because like, you know, were they tall tales? Because it was only like roughly 5 years, which I guess a lot of things can happen in 5 years, but who knows? Yeah. I don't know.
So Lucy is kind of, I don't know if I would say confused, but kind of wondering like why Sam is dressing like a man. Kind of, I'm not sure if Lucy totally really understands Sam's identity, which is normal because during this time period. But the thing that confused me is she sort of asks Sam about this mountain man that Sam had been adventuring with. And then sort of seems to ask, like, well, why didn't you let the mountain man know who you really were, as in assigned female at birth? And it just sort of, like, made me pause because I'm like, how does Lucy think that would fly?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly. And also just the fact that, like, it's not like Sam necessarily goes around telling everybody that. Like, Sam is dressing that way around her family, so I would assume that they want people to believe,
yeah,
you know, that they're not traditionally female. And it's also, I really liked some of the conversation that they had where Sam basically says to Lucy, like, it is very simply much easier to be perceived as a man out here because all men are terrible to women. Mm-hmm. So like presenting this way, like if nothing else, like I said, I don't know about necessarily the identity or, you know, transness necessarily, but like at a very basic level, what they're saying is essentially like the only way to really survive out here in the way that I have is for no one to know that I am female or, you know, have female anatomy. And I thought that was an interesting conversation to have too, because the West was very dangerous and scary. And men are also dangerous and scary. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think in the last section, when Sam shows up and whatever scenes Sam is in are better, just because Sam seems to kind of understand how things work more than Lucy does.
Yeah.
Lucy is like hopelessly naive and honestly sometimes kind of stupid about the things she does. Like she walks around in the red light district because everybody is so downtrodden and she knows how they feel. And it just confuses me as how she wouldn't recognize that as a dangerous place to be.
I thought that section with Lucy living in Sweetwater was really confusing because she walks into town basically barefoot and practically naked because she didn't take any clothes when they left home. And they spent like a month or more out in the desert, essentially. And so she walks into town with nothing, and she apparently approaches like a restaurant and starts doing dishes there, which I mean, I guess you could I can honestly say I don't know that much about life in the West, but I assume that you don't just make enough money to then just like get your own place in a boarding house, which is what she does. And then instead of like explaining what she does for a living to like be able to live in this boarding house, she makes a friend with this really, really rich girl, like the daughter of a gold rush man who made like buku bucks out there in the gold rush, and then spends all her time with this girl. So at first when Anna, this girl, is introduced, I thought that maybe Lucy had been given work as like her handmaid, essentially, or like, you know, a paid servant or something like that. But we come to find out that they're just like BFFs. And Anna, we're told her father is never home, but that she's always kind of chaperoned by these hired men, which also I find confusing because, like, they apparently just let her do whatever she wants. I thought that part was maybe, like, the most dubious in terms of explaining how life actually was at that time. Because I would assume that if Lucy was doing laundry, like I think is explained in one line, that she would not have time to just frolic and play in the river and go out with Anna all of the time. She would probably be doing laundry 12 hours a day, 7 days a week.
It was immensely frustrating to read that, I'll be honest. Because at first, when she goes to try to get a job, she like says like alone, orphan, or you know, something like that. And then these girls who are Indian are like nice to her and they're asking like how she is and things like that. And then she's like horrible and says, the book implies, like says racist things to them. And this is where it's like, what is this serving? Like her acting like this? I don't see her being this type of person. Now all of a sudden she is. Why is she mad at them? I just don't understand. Right. Like she came in to ask for help and now people are helping her and she's upset.
Right.
And then I thought she was still living by the river, even when she was with Anna, because it took the book took a really long time to tell us she was in a boarding house. But it kept like hitting it home that she's going down to the river to wash again and again and again.
Right.
And Anna's whole development was, I don't know, just such a trope that we've seen so much.
That part bummed me out because like, I think as most of the sections developed, I came to like really become invested in the story and where they were going. But this part just felt not well thought out. It felt like, I hate to say it, I felt like bad romantic historical fiction where like somebody doesn't totally know what it's like for that time period, but they just like the time period.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, because that scene where they are at Anna's house, and so Anna's fiance Charles is there, and he's been basically trying to sexually assault Lucy for like several years now. And Sam is also there and they like split up and then look at, you know, moves are made on both parties or whatever. And Charles keeps questioning Lucy about who Sam is, even though I swear to God, when they first ran into each other out on the street, Lucy says, "This is Sam. We were at the same orphanage together." And then they get there and then Lucy goes outside with Charles, which I don't know why she would bother taking him outside when she knows that he has tried to make moves on her before and he's basically assaulted her before. And they're out in the garden and he's like, "No, who is he?" And Lucy's like, "He's my brother or my sibling or whatever." And then he's like, "No, who is he? Who is he?" And I like it, to me, it felt like I was supposed to, I don't know, like I was like she had never explained who he was before. I don't know if that was just trying to show how drunk Charles was. I have no idea. That whole part like really confused me. And then he like beat up a bush or something. And then they go back inside and Sam is kissing Anna. And then, yeah, I don't, that whole scene was really upsetting and like confusing and felt kind of like young adult novel to me.
Yeah. I mean, it just was very like disorienting because did Charles see Sam and Anna kissing? And then if he did, why was he going, why did he just like calmly walk out into the garden with Sam to talk to him? Yeah. Like it just, that doesn't, it just, it was very weird. The whole Anna situation was very strange because then in the end, Lucy is like, "Okay, I'm going to tell Anna what Charles is really like, and then she's going to leave him and she's going to be fine." But we don't have any proof that she would react like that. Like, why does Lucy think she would? There's nothing in the book that points to Anna being a fair, good person.
Well, except that Anna, well, yeah, I don't know. There's nothing that points to Anna being consistent at all.
Right, yes.
We'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because, like, there's a point when Anna's basically asking Lucy to live with her forever. And then suddenly her dad bursts in through the door and is like, "Who is this girl? You're never allowed to speak to her again." And then Lucy leaves and you think that their friendship's going to be over, but then it still goes on and seems like they are inseparable and spend all their time together. So like, yeah, all of that just seems like really weird and inconsequential. And I don't know why any of it happened, honestly, because it didn't add anything to the story, I don't think. And I think the story was really strongest when Sam and Lucy were working together. Yeah, because after that, when they leave town to head out to San Francisco, is when I kind of liked that part again, where they're like getting to know each other and like have a mutual understanding.
Yeah, no, I agree. It does seem like it just is there to get them to leave again. Because Lucy goes back to the boarding house to leave with Sam. And then there's like one of Anna's hired men sitting on the porch. And this is...
Or I think we're supposed to believe that it's one of Anna's hired men. But I think it's one of the people that is just after Sam.
Okay.
For the debt.
But that was another confusing part because Lucy is like, I'll just go talk to him. Like, why would you think that? I just don't understand Lucy. Like, she's too dumb to be this teenager who's been able to survive on her own for so long. Like, I just don't believe she's that dumb. Yeah.
I also just don't think her life could have ever possibly been that, like, as easy as it's kind of portrayed in that section.
Yeah.
Like, the worst thing that happens to her, I guess, is, like, realizing that Anna doesn't really care about her because Anna's never going to have anything to worry about, like, realistically, right? Mm-hmm. When, like, I think realistically, Anna and Lucy never would have met because Lucy would not have ever been in a position to have time off to meet people.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the realistic part of what life in the West would have been like. Anyway. Man, that was a long rant about that part. Just because it just felt so out of character. Well, it felt out of some different book and kind of dropped right into the middle of this one. I don't know.
Well, yeah. And like you said, too, when they're on their way to San Francisco, you know, is when the book is at its best because they are trying to figure out each other. Lucy still kind of sees Sam as her sister. In a way, she can't quite understand. And I think Sam obviously kind of keeps Lucy at arm's length because Sam doesn't know how much Sam can reveal to Lucy. Because I think Sam, rightfully so, thinks that Lucy is not going to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But do we want to talk about the ending?
Yeah. So I guess big spoiler if you're worried about the ending at all. Granted, we've talked about most of the plot of the book. So, yeah, they get to San Francisco. They get tickets for a ship, and it's going to leave the next day. Well, here's the part that I was confused about. They go out gambling after they get their tickets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they fall asleep on the dock. Okay. And then when they wake up, the dock collapses underneath them. Is that what happened?
I have no idea. I also have a question of what the time period is, because it definitely feels like weeks go by when it's supposed to be only one day, one night.
Yeah, like 24 hours.
There's another part when they get to town and Lucy is like, how about some food and a bath? And Sam is like, okay, yes.
That's when they go to the brothel. Yeah,
Sam takes a bath, but Lucy never takes a bath?
No. Yeah, and that whole part was very weird because, like, so they're at the brothel, Sam talks to the madam, and they negotiate something, and then they go upstairs with, like, another girl from the brothel. Sam does, and Lucy's sitting there kind of putting two and two together, realizing that she's in a brothel, I think. And then she gets really mad, assuming that Sam is having sex with a girl who works there. And then she, like, freaks out, rips a girl's dress, and then, like, demands to speak to the madam and, like, doesn't get thrown out.
Again, I don't understand. I don't understand. And then they, like... So her and the brothel owner, like, make some kind of a trade. So Lucy wants to know what Sam is doing with the woman upstairs, which is like, okay, I think you know. But then the brothel owner wants to know in return where they're from. And then Lucy says, like, a word, like, the only word she can think of. And then the brothel owner is like, yes, how precious, or something like that. Like, what?
Yeah.
What is her name? Elska, I think.
Oh,
that means something to her? Like,
Is it supposed to? I didn't quite understand, like, the premise of that brothel either. Like, is it a weird exoticized fetishization type of place? Like, I guess that's kind of what was going on. Yeah, I don't know. Like, the whole premise of that was really strange. And then, yeah, it's weird to me that Sam didn't negotiate a bath for Lucy after taking her to this place that she's never been to.
Yeah.
When that was, like, the whole purpose of going there. That was weird. I'm still, like, also very thrown by them waking up on the dock and then, like, the dock immediately collapsing and then Lucy pulling Sam out from, like, the collapsing dock. And then, like, that was just... That just happened. And then a guy shows up and is like, hey, pay me those debts.
Yeah.
Everything happened super fast at that point.
And then this is like pretty much near to the end. So Sam owes all of this money, doesn't have it. So Lucy decides to make a bargain and go work at the brothel in exchange for Sam getting to leave. And Sam is just like, okay, cool, peace. But we already know that Sam risked their life to go to Sweetwater to get Lucy to go across the ocean together. So why would Sam all of a sudden just be like, okay, cool, bye.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me for the character of Sam to just do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that, too. And also just like to leave Lucy, who is apparently like so naive that she believes she's just going to be able to work at the brothel by like talking to men. Like that's what the work that she believes she's going to be able to do there. Yeah, I don't know. It was really strange.
It was. And I think, again, this comes back to like the book in pieces is really good, but altogether doesn't make a lot of sense to me because I didn't know what it was even like. Where were we going to? What do I want to say? What was the story about even? And what were we looking for Sam and Lucy to do?
Yeah, there is this common refrain of like, what makes a home a home? What makes a father a father? What makes this a this? That just kind of keeps coming up and coming up and coming up. But like, I don't feel like we ever got any sort of satisfactory idea of what Lucy believes makes any of those things either. It just kind of came up when, like, nothing else was going on.
Yeah.
How did you feel about the very last line?
I mean, at that point, I was just like, yeah, okay. Of course. Of course it would end like that, you know. I think yeah, there's a theme through it where everything is supposed to sort of feel up in the air and not grounded because Lucy doesn't know where her mom is from, doesn't know where her dad is from. So I think in some ways, in some parts that worked in that what you said, you know, looking for home and what does home mean? I mean, I guess maybe we're supposed to think like now Lucy is finally getting to choose what she wants. But I also don't see how she wasn't ever able, like, I think she was sort of sometimes able to do that, and she did make choices.
But it also sort of had, like, that Inception ending, which is just, I don't know, at this point feels like kind of cop-outy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if I really loved this book and got to the ending, I would be more mad. But because I'm sort of, like, ambivalent about it, the ending didn't bother me as much. Yeah.
It's really weird because, like, I think there's a lot about this book that I do actually like, but then, like, the frustrating parts are, like, so incredibly frustrating to me that it's hard to get over them. Like I said, I don't know. I mean, I loved the setting, and I liked the characters, and I liked being able to bring characters who did exist in this setting, right?
Yes.
And give them a voice and, like, a place to exist. But then... Yeah, just I think overall, like, a little uneven for me. But yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting read. I'll give it that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, reading the cover flap when it said a reimagined American West, I actually disagree with that because I don't really think it's reimagined. I think this is reality. And I appreciate that I got to read about these people who really were.
I was going to ask you that, what you think it meant by reimagined. I was wondering, because, like, there's a lot of talk about tigers, and I'm still not quite sure exactly what they meant by tigers. I wasn't sure if those were, like, because when Boz speaks about them it kind of sounds like a ghost that haunted him and then tried to like take him out in a way. But then there's like actually tiger bones at one point. I wasn't sure if the book was trying to like reimagine the West in that way, as in like bringing tigers into the American West. And then they also called what I'm assuming are coyotes, they called them jackals. And I wasn't sure if that was like a term that was actually used or if that was like part of the tiger thing. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, and they...
But yeah, I wasn't totally sure what reimagining the West meant in this context, yeah. But who knows?
They also call jackals the guys who come in and take all their gold. I kind of thought the tiger was actually just a mountain lion. However, I don't really know where Ba would have learned tiger from, except right. for Ma. Ma calling it a tiger makes perfect sense to me. But right. Ba doesn't yes. quite fit in as much. But yeah, reimagined, honestly, because I didn't read the cover flap before, but I right. think it's yeah. sort of like, it just sounds like a publisher's thing. And I actually, I don't really think of it as reimagined at all.
No.
Except in that maybe it's trying to change our imagination of what the American West was. And for that, I would right. totally agree.
By making it, you know, maybe slightly more accurate yes.
in terms of
who existed out there.
Who
yeah.
was there. And who built the West.
Right. Yes. Well, thanks for listening to The Bookstore.
If you would like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
And you can find all of the ways to contact us. We have our email, social media, and our phone line at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion will be The Murder at the Vicarage by Agatha Christie. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becky Yonk and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus. I was going to call him Jack Bourdon and Zosh Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday. Bye.
Bye.
And I put rum in my Earl Grey. People can hear sounds.